Hello and welcome to the Dits on Wrestling podcast here in video form and audio form. What a wonderful time to be alive. Look at us and listen to us. Another week, another episode. I'm Dits. I'm joined by Anthony. How are you?
I'm good. I'm still surprised that the technology is working for us in video form for another week in a row. I feel like I may have jinxed it a bit, but yeah, I mean, it's good to be heard and seen and back here for another episode as we continue to talk about the wide world of wrestling that we are enjoying a lot right now because there's a lot of good stuff happening.
There is, and we will completely gloss over the fact, and good cover, by the way, we'll gloss over the fact that we had a lot of technical snags before pressing record. So
yes, we did. But, you know, don't we just gloss it over it, power through. It's like one of those things when you, I remember when I used to have to do public speaking in school, and like the original first thing like you're taught is like, if you mess up or say like a wrong thing or like say your thing's out of order, just keep going because your audience doesn't know that you've messed up. Only you know you've messed up. And so yes. I was like, they're not seeing behind the fourth wall. They don't know that we've been at it for a good 35, 40 minutes trying to figure out how to sync everything up. But I mean, they do now. But that's part of the benefit of, you know, we like to show everyone what's happening behind the curtain. It's not like a Wizard of Oz type scenario where it's just smoke and mirrors. We like to let you peek behind the curtain and see, you know, how the sausage is made, proverbially, of course.
I do like sausage.
I'm not as much of a fan.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, not like, especially even basic things. Like if someone's like, oh, would you want like a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich? I'd be like, yeah. If they were like, oh, what about a sausage, egg, and cheese? I'd be like, no, I'm out.
Dude.
Like I'll tolerate it in some forms, but yeah, I'm not like a huge sausage guy.
Sausage is it. Sausage is the one.
Well,
especially,
I mean,
especially a good Frankfurter.
Well, yeah, that's what she said. But it depends on. I'm not really a big. Yeah, I'm not a sausage guy. Hmm. But to each his own. Like, no judgment on you for being that guy. No, you know, no judgment.
I do love a sausage.
Makes sense. Hmm. I'm down for that. Yeah, I don't. I'm okay with it. Like chopped up. And put it, like, if you do, like, some kind of, like, seasoned, like, Italian sausage type of thing and chop it up and put it into, like, a little bit of pasta. I'm okay with that.
Nice. Yep, nice. Yep.
But I'm not down. Even, like, to your point, like, a good Frankfurter, I'm down for, no, like, if someone was, like, oh, like, sausage, like, bun, different sauces and stuff. And I'm not, yeah, I'm not a huge, like, fan of it. I'm not a big, sorry if this is kind of the fork in the road and we've reached an impasse. I also don't think this is how a lot of people thought this episode would start. I also think the Rock sucks. I only said that because I know you have a problem.
So you don't like sausage. You hate on Drew, and now you hate on The Rock.
No, I don't hate The Rock. I like The Rock. He just sucks.
It still hurts. Still cuts deep. It still cuts real deep now.
That's almost as deep as that Drew McIntyre sword that he's rocking now, and he's got on that Elimination Chamber graphic. It's a big sword. It's really big. It's like almost big to the point that you'd be like, he couldn't even wield that. Like if he was an actual swordsman, like he's not wielding that. That's like a Monty Python-esque like sword in terms of how large it is. Like it's useless. It is just pure prop and nothing more.
I was watching because obviously he incorporates the sword into his entrances now, and I can't remember who I was watching it with. I mean, the list is pretty small because I don't go anywhere to watch wrestling. I'm in the house, so it was either my kids or I think it was my 4-year-old, and obviously McIntyre does the thing where he lifts the sword up and then he slams it into the ground and you know and then everything flames, all that good stuff, and he was just like, is he gonna go to the ring and hit people with that? I was like, no, it's PG, it's PG. Not
maybe
AEW.
In the Attitude Era. Yeah, I would say, ooh, yeah, maybe he might be slicing people up if it was on AEW. That'd be pretty, oof. Yeah, I'm not digging, though.
They were happy enough to drag Darby Allin in a body bag through a car park. Very brief.
I feel like Darby came up with that and volunteered. It was like, just put me in a body bag and drag me. And they were like, well, we could, like, edit it so we could drag, like, a mannequin or, like, some paper towels or something. He'd be like, no, drag me. And they'd be like,
put me in the body bag.
Drag me through the parking lot. If you guys could also like throw some broken glass in there with me, like I'd also be like, that doesn't even make any, no one's gonna see that. Why do you want that?
I love Darby Allin.
Yeah, you're a big fan. I like him too. I don't I don't love him. Not for anything of like his, but I think he's, I like his uniqueness and his moveset and what he does. He's fine with me. Fine in my book.
Oh. Well, I guess, today's episode, guys. We got a good show, actually. We do have a good show. We have your question of the week.
We do. Yeah, we do.
We're going to talk a little bit about the AEW main event this past week.
What's AEW?
Nothing to do with sausages, you'll be glad to know.
Thank goodness. Or The Rock. Or The Rock. Same time.
That's why we're together. Raw and SmackDown chamber match comparisons, because as soon as they announced what was going on with SmackDown this week, I was just like, interesting. There's a very good comparison going on here. And finally, The Miz and the Money in the Bank situation and potential follow-up to any successful cash-in, should go ahead. Food for thought on today's episode, I would say.
A little bit.
And we do have a little plug at the end of the episode for what's coming next week. We spoke about it last week, but in case you are new to the Dowel Pod, because it's now in video form and that's what you prefer, then wait till the end of the episode and you will find out all of that information. And if you already heard it last week, then hey, what's the duplicate?
Yeah, act surprised.
Reminder.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Refresher. Yeah.
Refresher.
Yeah.
But I guess we should dive straight into the straight into your question of the week. And full disclosure, I do not know what this question is. We never know what our questions are to each other.
Neither of us do. And I've kept this one more direct this week. As you and I mentioned last week, a bit of a tidbit down the road, we will be doing a live watch along for at the very least one night of WrestleMania of this year in 2021 at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa Bay, Florida, United States. So we're getting into WrestleMania season. I was thinking of that and thinking of WrestleMania. And in the spirit of that, my question to you is, what is your WrestleMania dream match that you never got to see that you would like to see? You could put one match together. Could be a tag team match, could be a one-on-one, could be, if you really want to like make it easier, be like, oh, I can't decide between these eight guys, so I want like an eight-man ladder match. But obviously, you know, to each his own. What is one WrestleMania dream match that you would like to see?
That is an incredibly hard question.
I know, right?
Which is why you've asked it. I think most people's go-to WrestleMania dream match is Sting Taker. I'd say that's a big one. For me, not so much, because I was never WCW, so I never really... I get the Sting hype back then, I don't now. So I can see where people are coming from. Like, peak Taker, peak Sting would be one hell of a WrestleMania dream match. But as for my own personal one,
do you want me to give you some of my thoughts for myself to allow like the wheels in your brain to start a little bit?
Are we talking like what was available at the time but didn't happen, or just in general? So I could go peak such and such from that time and peak such and such from this time.
Correct. Clash. Yeah, you could do like Rey Mysterio versus Macho Man Randy Savage.
Ah, okay. That makes things...
For example, like, so I've got a couple. I'm not a big Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan fan, but if we could have seen Ric Flair versus Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania in the early 90s, I think that would have been awesome to see as a spectacle. But as a pure match, and I go back and forth on this a lot. I always have, like, different thoughts that creep into my brain. Especially, like, at their peak, I would love to see Bret Hart versus Kurt Angle at WrestleMania. In any kind of match, but preferably like a submission match. Give me or some sort of like 30-minute Iron Man match, some kind of thing that just like you guys are arguably the two greatest like technical workers of all time. Go into the ring and do your thing. And I never, because you never got to see like anything, like I never got to see them in the ring with one another, obviously because of their time difference and when they wrestled. Although they were like kind of close, but not really. yeah, that's one for me that I'm like, and so that's an example of what you could do. You could be like, yeah, no, this guy for this guy, even though they're like 10 years apart in terms of when they wrestled, or maybe they were only in WWF or WWE briefly for like a month or a year, but you can kind of do something like that.
I mean, there's a lot floating around in my head at the moment, so I'm literally just going to reach out and grab one. This is probably never going to be on anybody's list.
Mm.
But I think it's to be honest, it's a match I just generally would want to see, and I think if one of them's Kurt Angle, if the other guy was built up to where he should be, it'd be interesting to see how it goes. I would love to see Kurt Angle passing the torch to Chad Gable.
I knew you were going to say that. As soon as you said built up, after you mentioned Kurt Angle, I was like, it's going to be Chad Gable.
But then there's loads of other, like Johnny Gargano, Shawn Michaels, Johnny Gargano, Eddie Guerrero.
So just anything with Johnny Gargano.
Anything with Johnny Gargano, really. Johnny Takeover, Johnny WrestleMania.
Johnny Taker, Johnny Sting, Johnny, like Johnny Hulk Hogan, Johnny Ultimate Warrior, Johnny Papa Shango. Just anybody with Johnny.
Anybody. That's a really tough question. There's just, I can't really pin my hat on a specific match because there is that much. Did Eddie and Sean ever wrestle?
I don't think so.
Because I think they could put on a...
And at the very least, not on like the WrestleMania stage or any stage of like significance.
I would actually probably go Eddie Sean.
That's pretty cool. That's a cool one. Ooh, Eddie and Sean. That's a cool one. I figured in it, I know that I recognize the difficulty of this question, but my thought in asking it was, one, maybe you had like a match in your mind and you had to go to, or two, I wanted to see what like initially would come to your mind of like, oof.
A lot.
Because there is a lot. Yeah, 1,000%. You're thinking of like combos, and I go through that all the time. Like, and especially with now with what's going on with AEW and the whole like crossover thing and how the Forbidden Door has been opened, and even with just with Impact and AEW and New Japan working together and everything like that, you have all these like possibilities for matches and all these things. And I've mentioned it several times on the show, but like I grew up with WCW and WWF. Like I alternated between both of them on Monday nights, flipping channels between TNT and USA. And so I've always been like, oh man, I love crossovers. And I would take my wrestling toys and have them, like, I would do invasion angles with my toys when I was like 6 and 7 and 8. And I think from that, from a very early age, I've always had like that dream match concept in my brain. And then I think every wrestling fan has always like had like matches in their head of like, oh, I would have loved to see this and I would have loved to see that. And especially, I mean, I don't know, WWE overuses it nowadays where everything is like, oh, the dream match of the century. And then next year it's like, oh, the dream match of the century. And I think that's an interesting thing, yeah, to kind of see. And there are so many possibilities. Bret Hart and Kurt Angle is one that has always kind of stuck in my brain.
That would be amazing.
But man, there's like, I think of like tag team ones and think of like, oh, just like the Legion of Doom versus the Steiner Brothers, or... oh man, like the Dudleys versus the Revival. Like, oh, just so many like different cool like avenues and things. And oh man, I'm even thinking like, oh, you know what's, and they wrestle kind of in the same era, like Mr. Perfect versus Shawn Michaels, like in a WrestleMania match for like the Intercontinental Championship. I don't know. There's just so many like cool options. And yeah, it's a very thought provoking question to lead off this thought provoking episode of the Dow Pod.
And that will fit nicely into what my question to you will be next week.
Interesting.
This is actually a good segue. You know us, we love a good segue on this show. That perfectly segues into next week, where we're doing a live show on Twitch, doing Draft That Returns for the first time this year. We're doing it live on Twitch, and we are drafting our dream WrestleMania cards.
Really cool. That really does segue nicely. I didn't even plan that.
It does.
That worked out really good.
And I'll get a Ditz question of the week to you at the very start of that episode, because it's WrestleMania based and it would be just as thought provoking as this.
Interesting.
Although I have my answer this time. I can come prepared. I have my answer. Because I'm asking the question. Which
next week's draft, that is going to be sweet. Ooh.
It's going to be good.
Ooh.
I already started a little bit.
I know several that I want. And again, it's all, well, I mean, we'll get into the rules for next week's episode and as we kind of plug things, but it's got to be like matches that have actually like happened.
Yeah.
So we're picking, you know, if you pick like, oh, I want the Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan from WrestleMania 6, like I can't then pick that match.
It's going to be a
good time.
It is going to be good.
Draft is always good.
Yeah.
That's fun, but it's also like super stressful sitting there like being like, I hope he doesn't pick this. I hope he doesn't pick this. I hope he doesn't pick this. And then just like back and forth and oof. Oof. Man.
I've got three.
Interesting.
So
interesting.
Fun. So I need.
I won't. I mean, you can pick all of them that have The Rock because I think he sucks, and I won't be picking him for anything. I know what. What's funny is I know what your. I know my number one is safe because I know what your number one is.
Yeah.
And you, I think, believe you also know mine. So I at least know my, I have my number one, and then everything from then on. I actually know what my number two is as well.
Ooh.
Immediately, I have my top two like in my head right now.
I would ready. I've got my one, as you know, but my other two can literally fit in anywhere, to be honest, apart from like the top three.
I've got a hard two.
It's gonna be tough. I'm looking forward to it.
It is tough. Again, that's another thing as well. It's live, and oh man, got to think on the fly, and again, there's so many. There's so many good WrestleMania matches. I mean, there's been, what is this WrestleMania? 37? 35? 36? 105?
38? I honestly don't know.
it's somewhere in there. And so it's past the mid 30s. So you've got a lot of matches to choose from. And we each have to pick 10. Yeah. It's going to be fun. I'm really excited for next week's episode. And it's live on top of that. So it's going to be a good time. Or terrible.
Now I have four. I just thought of another one.
Okay.
But all will be revealed next week, live on Twitch. But, of course, if you are not able to watch it live, the episode will be distributed out to YouTube and podcasting platforms. So don't worry. If you can't get it, you'll still be able to check it out.
Your air traffic control signals with your hands was very good. Directing traffic. Clear the runway.
Direct you to Twitch, but if you can't... Go to YouTube, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Oh, there you go, then. So,
good segue. Yeah. I didn't plan that, and nor did you.
Look at us. I need to set that up for next week. Just have that blaring out every five seconds. Look at us. So, AEW. How about that main event?
How about the fact that we're talking about AEW for, what, the third week in a row?
And as the, well, I guess you could say the main, well, whatever topic comes first, I guess is the main topic of the show.
So you've watched it multiple weeks in a row. We're kind of leading off with that. Yeah, what a main event. What'd you think? What are your thoughts?
First and foremost, because we are talking AEW, I really enjoyed AEW this week.
Okay. As like holistically, like the whole show.
The whole show.
Okay.
I thought... I don't really know much about Joey Janela and his, you know, match quality and all that good stuff. But I thought he had a really fun opener with Darby.
Mm-hmm. They've worked together a lot on the independents, so they have like a lot of chemistry with one another.
They talked that up on commentary as well.
Yes.
And I like that AEW does that. They bring in that indie side of things, whereas WWE goes it's like AJ Styles. Oh yeah, he performed overseas.
He's never wrestled before.
Where? So I like that AEW does that. And so that was a really good opener. And then you had, you know, Sammy, you know, leaving the Inner Circle, and you had the whole. I'm not into Sting in AEW. I'm really not. I'm just not interested.
I'm interested to see when they have their match. It's going to be like a cinematic style, and I'm interested to see what you think. Yeah, it's got to be, and I'm interested to see what your thoughts will be. Again, I, as a person who the the NWO Sting storyline and that saga, especially watching it like live week to week as a kid, that to me is probably like peak wrestling. That's like the best storyline I'd ever seen, and the excitement and the buzz and the pop and everything was so great. And even me, so like Sting holds a place in my heart. And yeah, I'm also in the same boat. I really just like, I see him and I'm just like, okay, cool. But I'm not like, oh, here we go. Like,
I don't get goosebumps.
No, I did that first. When he showed up the first time, I was shocked and excited. Like I popped, I jumped out of my seat. What I also think is cool though, even though like it's kind of, it's not like super riveting, I do think it's cool that he's shown up. Granted, he's not wrestling, but he's shown up like almost every week. So it's cool that he's basically kind of like a full-timer. Like he's showing up week in and week out. It's not like we see him once and then he shows up like next month and then, where he's going to have a match in August and he doesn't show up for another 2-3 months. Like he's there like every week, which is cool to see that he's still like, no, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it full tilt. So good for him in that regard.
I think that might be the problem for me.
Oh, you're seeing too much every week.
Yeah.
Oh, saturated.
You know, Sting is a special attraction at this stage. So less is more. You know?
And especially if he's not wrestling.
That's one thing WWE did. Yeah. That's one thing WWE did well, is they limited Sting's appearances. Like he would appear sporadically and maybe once every 3 or 4 weeks, maybe more. I think they did that well. Obviously, apart from that, they handled him, pretty badly. You know, in no way he should have lost to Triple H at WrestleMania 31. But
Seth Rollins also handled him pretty badly, too.
Just a tad. Just a tad. But, yeah, I mean, it's good for AEW that he's there. I just don't want to see him every week, and it's just not hitting the right notes for me. But what did hit the right notes for me was that main event. Jon Moxley teaming with Lance Archer, facing off against Kenny Omega and Kenta. I didn't think... I mean, was this match announced pretty much straight away after the last week?
Yeah, I would say by either late Wednesday night or early Thursday morning / midday Thursday, it was announced for the following week. So within 24 hours, at the very least, it was announced.
See, I wasn't aware of it until maybe Tuesday, the week just gone. So a day before Dynamite. So I was like, ooh, they're doing it this... Well, obviously, it's even sooner for people that found out the news within 24 hours. But I was like, they're doing it this soon? I was like, that's pretty awesome.
I think it's part in continuing that build of... And see, that's what's interesting about it is... I think part of it is to maintain the intensity and the feud that Moxley and Kenta have in New Japan. But to do it on AEW is really, I mean, granted, AEW gets to put it on their show and it gets to bring eyeballs, but they're really continuing and furthering a New Japan storyline. Moxley coming to the ring with the IWGP US title is to continue a New Japan storyline. So to see that level of like, symbiosis and the fact that they're willing to like do that, appreciate it, I'm a words man, I think that's pretty sweet to like, for that, granted, again, it's not like it's not benefiting AEW at all. They get more eyeballs because they get to book Kenta on the show and it gets to be a sweet match and a good payoff, but it's cool to see them continuing a New Japan storyline and furthering it on their show. It continues to give me more hope for what will happen in the future. But even just in a vacuum, oof, fun match, brawl, good moments, good spots, good ending. Oof, yeah, it was a good match. I was excited. I didn't know how it was going to hit. I really didn't. And I came away very surprised. Not surprised, but pleasantly pleased, because I think it'd be interesting to like see that, and especially seeing the hype from like Kenta from the week before of being like so geeked up that no matter what expectation you set, it's not going to reach that height. And I thought it almost hit everything. It ticked all the boxes. It was a good time.
And it's good to see AEW pull the trigger so quickly, and obviously on New Japan's front, letting Kenta wrestle in the first place. You know, within a week of him showing up, it's not like he's come back. He's come back on the show this week, cutting a promo, or just an appearance of some description. Like, he's coming back to wrestle. Like, and within a week, a New Japan star is wrestling. on AEW TV, which is...
And he brought, and even think about, again, like, he brought, like, brand identifiers. Like, he's wearing a New Japan Bullet Club shirt. He's got the briefcase.
Yeah.
Moxley has the title. Like, there are brand identifiers. Like, that is, that's a true working relationship. And, oh, and then when you add in all the little other things outside of the ring, and you saw what Tama Tonga was tweeting and what Jay White was tweeting, and some people have thoughts and rumors that we're going to get a blood and guts match between Kenny and the Bucks and the Good Brothers versus Jay White and the Gorillas of Destiny and some other members of Bullet Club now at Double or Nothing in May. There's some rumors and thoughts and predictions happening like that. Ooh, there's just so much potential. But again, in a vacuum, fun match. Moxley did his thing. It was nice to see Archer get some shine. He started out really strong in AEW, and I really thought he was going to win the TNT title, and then Cody won it, and I thought that killed a lot of momentum and a lot of steam for him, and it's good to see him get back in the main event picture. He's somebody who, in the 2019 G1, completely blew me away. I was so impressed and so just really honestly in awe of everything that he did. He's a really good performer and a really good worker when he gets the opportunity to shine. So it was nice to see him in the main event.
So I think when I last gave AEW a chance, that was just as Lance Archer was coming in, because I remember us talking about it quite often. And then obviously I turned away from the product. So for me, Lance Archer has always been in the spotlight in some way, but obviously there's a shadow in between that period for me. But
a large shadow,
a very large shadow. But there was two really good spots in the match that I really loved. One was cool as shit, and the other one was more funny than anything else. The cool one was when Kenta got out with a powerbomb from Lance Archer, you're going to go for the announce table. And then he literally just sprinted off the stage onto Moxley on the table.
I love that. It was like awesome. That was such an element of realism, too. It was like he saw his opportunity and was like, oh, and then just ran and took it. I was not expecting that. That was really sweet. And if you looked at it on the replay, oh, his knee, like, and like shin caught Mox like right in the eye and in the face. It like, at first I was like, oh, he kind of missed the landing. And then when they showed it in replay and then I saw it on Twitter, he got him right in the face.
Pow.
Right in the kisser. Pow, right in the kisser. That was a good one. Yeah, that was my favorite spot of the match.
That was my favorite. But then a very close second was Omega trying to get Archer up for the one-winged angel, and he had to get the Good Brothers to help him lift him up.
That was cool. When he went for it, I was like, dude, no way. Like, Archer's too big. And then I was like, oh, is he going to get him? And then, yeah, when the Good Brothers helped him on, I was like, oh, that's a funny way to do it. I've never seen, like, a shield bomb, one-winged angel type thing. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, I did like
that. And that's also, too, what's good about that is, like, that ending continues Kenny's, like, chicken shit heel type of gimmick, and then also like Archer takes the pin, which I figured he was going to given the rest of the other people that were in that match, but it's also not a bad way to go out. Like, he had to get like triple one winged angel in order to like go down and go out, so not a bad way to go out for him at all, really. Like, and yeah, it worked all around. Oh, it was a really good match.
And Jake Roberts got physical in this as well, kind of.
It made me nervous seeing him get, like, because his body is not in good, like, physical shape from just a multitude of things. But, yeah, he got some movement in, took a shot, dished out some punishment as much as he can, I guess. I'm a massive Jake the Snake fan, so seeing him do anything will get me excited. But I was definitely like, oh, no, don't do that. Okay, like, fall down gently. Are you okay? You okay? Like, it made me, like, nervous and worried.
And I was like, as soon as Kenny did the whole like V trigger time, I was like, oh, don't do it.
I was like, no way. But then I saw Mox in the corner on the ground getting ready, and I was like, oh, okay, he's gonna interrupt it. But that makes me think of another spot I liked. I think it was on Kenny. Kenny and Kenta are like, it's early in the match and Moxley's in the turnbuckle and Kenny and Kenta are like running and like hitting him. And then Kenny goes to do it again and Archer comes out of nowhere and just shoulder tackles the hell out of Kenny and just like flings him halfway across the ring. That was like a good spot to start the match, and then we really got into it further. That was a good time.
Oh. It was a good ending to what was a pretty good show. So for me, AEW is going. It was like that, and then that, and then up. So we're in an upward trajectory at the moment. So
positive signs.
I'm happy.
It's doing enough at the very least to like pique your interest and keep you going back.
Oh, absolutely. I think at this point now, because I've been watching it and I'm invested in a couple of the storylines that are going on. Like, even if we weren't doing this show, I would still go and watch it.
Oh, that's a really good thing to hear.
So I like that. I'm concerned though, when we take the month break next month from the pod, that me not, because I'm not gonna be able to watch any wrestling.
Yeah.
Which is gonna be really annoying, because it is the build up to WrestleMania as well. So I'm in the space of me getting back, I'm gonna have to watch like
cram everything in wrestling.
I'll be interested to see if I can keep up with AEW. Like, I mean, obviously for the sake of the pod, I will when I come back, but will I be as invested? I hope I am. And the break doesn't kind of just go, yeah, maybe it wasn't, maybe that wasn't great after all. I don't know. We'll see how things pan out. But we're only a week away from a pretty big show. I personally don't think it's a big show. But WWE would have you know that it is a big show.
WWE would beg to differ.
They would beg to differ. Elimination Chamber is coming up next Sunday, and we'll throw this out. We are doing a live episode again, you know, on Twitch. We've already mentioned it, so we won't be doing any Elimination Chamber coverage. So this is as close as you'll get to Elimination Chamber coverage, apart from maybe like a couple of one-liners the following week. But they have that show going on, and the two chamber matches are now booked. Uh-huh. And I thought it was actually interesting the way that Raw and SmackDown have done it, and therefore is worthy of conversation. Agreed. So Raw announced their Elimination Chamber on Raw, funny little thing. Drew McIntyre is in this chamber match, and usually you don't really see that. I don't remember the last time that happened. Maybe when Bray won the...
Yeah, when Bray beat AJ.
WWE title.
Yeah, when Bray pinned AJ, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
AJ was the champ. Bray won the title in that match. And yeah, because AJ went for the phenomenal forearm. He got caught. Bray hit Sister Abigail and got the pin. And I think AJ was the champ going into that match. But Bray definitely won the title in that match.
Or was it Cena?
Maybe. I don't know.
Either way.
But Bray won the title. The champion was in the match. The champion was in the match.
So I think this is the first time since then, which is what, three or four years, maybe? We've got Drew defending the title against Sheamus, AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Miz, and Randy Orton. And what they've been billing this as is it's all former champions.
I like it.
Which is cool, mm-hmm. But it'll feed into my the point I was going to make. And I think it's... I think it's a general consensus across, most wrestling, well, WWE fans anyway, or people that I like to hate on WWE. There's a lot of those people. On the SmackDown side of things, it's an interesting one, and I like the direction they're going with it because it feeds directly into the Roman Reigns bullshit. So the match itself is to determine the number one contender for Reigns' title. So Kevin Owens, Daniel Bryan, Cesaro, Sami Zayn, King Corbin, and Jey Uso squaring off to face Roman Reigns. But the twist is that Roman Reigns will face the winner of that match immediately following the Chamber match.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is well done.
Okay.
On the storyline front. And you didn't watch SmackDown, did you? So you don't...
I did not.
So basically what it was, I think the initial thing, Adam Pearce was out and he was just like, look, Roman, you're going to defend the title in the Elimination Chamber. Just like Drew is on Raw, you'll be doing it. And Paul Heyman was like, nah. said, I've seen the contract for Elimination Chamber. At no point does it say Roman Reigns will defend that Universal title in the Elimination Chamber. That contract only stipulates that that title will be defending at the Elimination Chamber.
Interesting.
So Heyman has twisted it and got it so Roman Reigns faces whoever the winner of that match is.
Okay.
So I like that. I like that. Rather than just going, there's your match. It's all built around the whole Roman Reigns thing, which we both love, and so many other people love. So I think that's a unique way of doing it. And I've certainly not seen it, like, unless you count in a cash in for the Money in the Bank. That's a nice way to do it. I don't know out of that entire field of people who's going to win. I can't pick anybody, to be honest. Kevin Owens is an obvious go-to, just purely because of what they've been up to the last couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not King Corbin.
No, I think it's got to be between Cesaro, Daniel Bryan, and Owens coming away with
potentially
it.
Potentially Jey Uso.
Maybe.
Depending on, but yeah, I don't know how they would go with it. But the contrast is between the two, and something I've picked up on through just checking through social media, is on the Raw side of things, putting in these former world champions, like, you're taking spots away from up-and-comers. Like, I'm on the fence, really, with it, because the star power in this match is pretty big, and that's a good thing. Like, it's, you know, why would WWE not use these people? Like, they had them on the roster. They're all great. Why not use them? But then at the same time, at least two of those spots should have gone to up-and-comers. And I'm looking at Jeff Hardy straight away. Get him out. Like, that guy has been on... Like, Jeff Hardy's great, but that guy's been on a losing streak for the last 2 months. Like, he's not really proven himself. And yet here he is getting a WWE title shot over Edge, who has just earned that, right? I know it's at WrestleMania, you know, but, like, why has he got that opportunity when somebody like Keith Lee, who beat Matt Riddle this past week on Raw and has done well in the Raws previous before he had to go out for COVID, why is he not getting the chance? The Miz, Mr. Money in the Bank, which we're going to get onto very, very soon. Why is he in the match? He doesn't need to be in the match. The Money in the Bank guy does not need to be in the match. It kind of defeats the purpose of that whole gimmick. Get him out. Move, I don't know. Ali. Ali.
Oh!
This is actually one of the points, and I've seen a few bits and bobs about this before, and it's such a natural thing that you could use. You go back to Kofi Mania season.
Should have been Ali.
And it should have been Ali in that match, but he was taken out. And with the storyline going on at the moment with Retribution and the New Day, you have Ali in this match, and Kofi takes him out again, or Xavier Woods takes him out. And then you set up that Ali-Kofi match at WrestleMania. So instead of The Miz, have Ali. Like, that makes more sense to me. So you've got a mixture of former world champions, which is the aim. But then you also have up-and-comers in there. You can build stars. Like, Ali could come out of that thing looking like a star. Keith Lee could come out of that thing looking like a star. You know, I don't think either of them will win. Drew, I think, is going to retain that. But
yeah,
either of them can come out looking like a star. And to be honest, I don't think Drew should be in there either. I think the Chamber's a really good match to build for a number one contender. So I think it should have been... Unless they're going to go with Drew and Sheamus at WrestleMania... I don't think Drew should have been in there, and they should have left it. They could keep Sheamus in there, but also take Drew out and put somebody else in there, and then have, like, Sheamus win the match or something like that. And I think that's the difference, because then you look at SmackDown, you got Owens, Daniel Bryan, Cesaro. Sami Zayn's on a little bit of a push at the moment, so Cesaro. Daniel Bryan is as good as Daniel Bryan always is, and Kevin Owens is red hot at the moment. And so is Jey Uso. The only iffy one in there is really King Corbin. But all these guys, not necessarily up-and-comers, but guys that could literally have a star showing in this match and go, push.
Right.
That's the difference for me. And that's where I think SmackDown has the edge massively over what Raw has got.
My thing with Elimination Chamber is, I don't, like, even just in this instance is a good example of, I don't know how, like, I get the former champion thing, but, like, I don't understand how it's decided, like, who, like, from a real world, from a kayfabe perspective of, like, on-screen believability, like, what is the qualifications to get into the chamber? Like, we just decide, like, hey, here's this pay-per-view, here's these guys that get put in. Because, like, Jeff Hardy just keeps losing. And we've got, so, like, how do you decide who gets put in? What are the qualifications? What are, I would much rather prefer to see, like, I don't know if we're going to have, like, six people in the chamber. I'd much rather see, like, a 12-man tournament or some kind of, like, series of matches where it's just, like, you know, these 12 guys are going to fight each other. The winner of each match gets put into the chamber or some kind of something, some kind of circumstance that we can determine, okay, like, this is how it's decided who gets in. Also, with your point of the champion being in the match, I like the champion in the match because of the timing of Elimination Chamber. I would, however, much prefer the winner of Elimination Chamber to get a championship title match with the champion. However, I don't like the timing when this pay-per-view happens. We just finished Royal Rumble, where the winner of the Rumble gets a title match. WrestleMania is right around the corner. Give me Elimination Chamber in July, and the winner of Elimination Chamber faces the champion at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Give me some, like, some sort of, I just don't think it works, especially from a storyline angle, because then you get, like, the Bray example is a good one. Like, Bray wins the title, and then now he's the champion, and then you've got a champion going into Mania who's only been champion for, like, a month and a half, maybe, kind of. And if that person's already in a feud, and because WWE doesn't do enough long-term booking, then you have to, like, readjust feuds and redesign, like, your plan and what's going on. And it's a weird angle overall, like, the timing of when the pay-per-view happens. And then, so that's point number two for me. And then point number three, again, is, like, the difference in the SmackDown one versus the Raw one. I like what you pointed out with what Heyman did about the contract, because it fits in with this whole thing with Adam Pearce from the very beginning of when he was supposed to fight Roman. And then he was like, actually, I'm glad you signed the contract, because, you know, if I somehow, he does the whole injury shtick because of the contract, and then Kevin Owens fights him. So I love how, like, they've continued that, and Heyman's like, actually, I looked at the contract, so blah, 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 blah. I like how they're continuing that angle. But I also, again, don't like, and I guess it's fine that it's, like, a difference and it's unique, but in the same token, like, it just makes me think, okay, so is, like, Drew a moron and he doesn't read his contract? Or, like, is his contract different? Why aren't the contracts the same? It just opens up more questions for me to be, like, what is the basis for this match? Like, when you bring in things like that, like, well, the contract states, okay, like, now I feel like I want to see things, like, what are in the contracts? Like, what's going on? It's like a variable that's just thrown in there just for the sake of this one story. I like it, but then it calls into a lot of other things into question for me. It makes me wonder, like, okay, well then, like, what a contract. And when you add it with the other thought that was in my brain of, like, how do you decide who gets in the chamber? Like, what is, like, because even the former champion thing, there's probably more former champions on Raw that you could also, that also meet that criteria. Like, what is, it's just, I have, like, a lot of questions. And I also, I don't like the timing of it. Because, again, what do you, you know that it's not, like, you know the champion probably isn't going to lose the belt. And if he does lose the belt, champions are supposed to get rematches. But then, like, when does the champion get their rematch? Because, like, WrestleMania is right around the corner. And then the guy who won the Rumble is supposed to fade. Like, I just have so many questions. Like, it just, I like the concept. I always have. Give it to me at a different time, preferably in the summer.
Yeah.
And then have it lead to something else. And then establish ground rules or some kind of something. Like, I want to know, how do you decide who gets into this match? Because, again, it's a big deal. It's basically, like, even though it's one single match, it's basically like a tournament type feel for the title or for a number one contendership, some kind of something. how do we decide who? Or if it's, or if we're not being told how they're deciding it, that's fine. But you should be picking like six dudes who have been winning a lot recently. So that way it's low hanging fruit for us to be able to connect the dots and be like, oh, well, of course they chose like so-and-so. He's been winning the, like, I quickly think in my brain, like, he's won his last like five pay-per-view matches or like something like that. Some kind of criteria to connect it. But again, that would require long-term booking and planning, which kind of doesn't happen too often. But yeah, I have like, I even said it, you hit it right on the head. I've been out of town this weekend, and so I didn't see SmackDown. And the first thing I did when I pulled up the card is I said to you, I was like, how come Roman isn't in the SmackDown one? And I was, and Drew, I was like, what? I was like, that doesn't seem like it makes sense. I like the angle. Like, I like the what Heyman did, but it just makes me be like, what? Like, what? I don't understand.
But on the point of the qualification side of things, obviously Raw was just, yeah, former champions, in you go. But at least SmackDown had qualifying matches on the show this week.
That's good.
So Adam Pearce put Owens and Jey Uso in as dead certs.
Okay.
And it was Brian, Cesaro, Zayn, and Corbin who all had to qualify. And interestingly, they had to qualify in tag team matches. So Sami Zayn and King Corbin teamed up against the Mysterios.
That's cool.
And it was like, whatever team wins gets in. So
that's a cool thing. Sami, I like Zayn, that.
Sami Zayn and Corbin won. They were inserted.
And see, even if they didn't do that, I also would have been like I look at the names and I'm like, well, Cesaro's been killing it. That makes sense. Owens should have beaten Reigns at Rumble. He had him dead to rights before Reigns did the stuff with the ref, so Owens should be in there. Daniel Bryan has also been killing it. Okay, I'm okay with that. Like, so even if they didn't do qualifying matches, I would have been fine with it given some of the names on there. But yeah, then the fact that they did qualifying matches, again, that now I'm even more upset or confused, because then why didn't we do that on the other? Why not have – and again, you set up things for your Raw episode. Why not have like a little tournament of former champions to decide who gets into the – that's just another – I don't know why they're like SmackDown's going to be good and Raw's going to suck. It's like they do that on purpose. Like they just – I feel like somebody in the back is like – that's a really good idea for SmackDown. Can we do that for Raw? And Vince is like, shut up. Okay, sorry. My mistake. We gave Drew a sword. Raw is going to be great.
What more do you want?
What more do you want from me? I've already given him a sword. I can't do anything else. But that's good then. I like that. But again, even so, I feel like deciding the people that got put in those tag team matches makes sense, because these people who are in it for SmackDown have had like victories or been in high profile things where they've been doing positive things for themselves. So I understand the rationale either way, but Raw, I mean, I don't know, I guess Jeff Hardy paints his face and used to be a champion. So good for him.
It's part of the course for Raw, to be honest.
Bully for him.
Poor
Drew.
I do feel for Drew. I really do.
Damn, man.
But it is what it is. That is the landscape of Raw at the moment. And yeah, it doesn't seem to be showing any signs of. In fact, actually, just on the Raw, quickly on the Raw front before we move into The Miz, there was no Alexa Bliss or Fiend-ish segment on Raw this week, which I found was interesting. So I think they may actually be doing something right and letting it simmer. And then maybe we'll get an appearance at the Elimination Chamber.
Don't oversaturate things.
But I think the only issue with the Elimination Chamber side of things is that it's live. So if you... I've already got like the visual in my head of like Randy in the pod. You get the whole like glitchy, and the lights go out, and then Alexa Bliss is in the pod with him when the lights go back up, or the Fiend is in there with him or something like that. I think that'd be
terrifying.
Really cool. But I don't know how, unless they tape that one, because that's what they did when they set Bray on fire.
Correct.
Well, on fire.
Correct. Something was set on fire.
Something.
Some kind of mannequin. Yeah, some weird sort of, yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how they do it, although I do want to see that spot now.
That would be cool. I would be terrified.
This is why we should do another GM mode, because we're all over this stuff. No,
it was so rewarding, but it was so exhausting. Yes. Just really exhausting.
Yeah.
But we had a hell of a SummerSlam.
We did.
It was a great show. Our show was fantastic, especially on your end. You did a very good job. Oof.
I did.
Oh, and I had it's funny, we talk about Cesaro. Cesaro was in my championship match.
Oh, he was?
At SummerSlam. It was Cesaro versus Walter for the title.
Yes.
Oh, man, look at us.
Look at us. They listen.
They did. Well, of course, Vince, big fan of the show. Naturally. Ever since the Jerry Springer times, naturally.
And speaking of Jerry Springer, the Money in the Bank.
Natural segue.
I've been looking at the Miz for the last couple of weeks, and I've just been like, what is Money in the Bank anymore? Like, what is let it go away. Let it go away for a year, 2 years, then bring it back. I don't remember the last time. Well, Seth Rollins to me is the last great Money in the Bank holder. I don't think there's been anything. And to be honest, I think maybe that cash in from Seth Rollins and the run he had with that briefcase, because it was so good, I don't think anything can really.
There's nowhere to go but down from there.
Yeah, like you just cashed in at WrestleMania. Like, where do you go from there? And now we've got The Miz teasing, oh, I'm going to cash in at WrestleMania.
Right.
It's been done.
How did he even... He beat Otis for it, right?
Yeah, see, this is the thing. So...
Which sucked. And Otis shouldn't have even had it anyway, because AJ got it down, but fumbled it in the worst Money in the Bank ever. I mean,
We don't talk about that match.
It's all bad. Like, it's really stemmed from that. Ever since that, like, this whole run has been crap, and it's because the initial establishment of Otis winning it was just terrible.
I don't know if they're going to have Miz successfully cashing this in, because the way... I know, like, generally, before a cash-in, they'll actually push down the holders to make you think that it's not going to happen, and then all of a sudden it happens. You're like, oh my god, oh yeah, like I'm so surprised. Like, they do it all the time, and I'm thinking, are they doing that with The Miz? But it's The Miz's gimmick and the way he's been treated with matches. Like, he loses a lot of matches, and it's been going on for so long. It's kind of like, well, it's not a flash in the pan. Let's have him lose a couple of matches. Let's have him act like a dope, so we can throw people off the scent a little bit before he does cash in. Like, right. It's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
So is he going to successfully cash in? And if he does successfully cash in, is it even going to be a good thing? I don't think it will.
Especially after Edge, like, ripped him apart on Monday for being like, why would you tell me you plan, you idiot? Like, I operate on this higher level and you're down here. I was like, so are we just going to belittle the crap out of him so he sucks? Like, it just, ugh.
If we're talking Miz 2000 and I want to say 18, like peak Miz when he was in his feud with Daniel Bryan, Ziggler, you put that Miz as WWE champion, I can live with that. I think that kind of heel Miz, great. But this one with Morrison, the whole, I used to quite enjoy it, you know, the hey hey ho hos and all that kind of stuff, but it's just got so tiresome over the last couple of months, and it's just not believable anymore that he would be a credible champion. But it makes me think that they are going to go that way, because not only did he take the title off Otis when he did that cash in at TLC, and then Drew obviously retained the title the following day or that night, which I think it was the same night. Adam Pearce was just like, yep, John Morrison was actually the one that cashed in, not you, here's your briefcase back. And I don't think they would have done that if they weren't. If they're saying that, we always say they don't really long-term book. So who knows? Who even freaking knows? But I don't. It's just not going to work for me. It's just not going to work. It pains me.
I don't like it.
I do think the Money in the Bank briefcase needs to go away. That gimmick needs to not necessarily die, but it needs to go in some kind of hibernation for a little bit.
I used to think it was the coolest thing. I love ladder matches in general. And then the fact that it's like, oh, like, this gets you, like, a title match. And it's not only, like, a title match at a pay-per-view or something. It's, like, a cash-in at any point that you want to take advantage and capitalize and do whatever you want. I was like, oh, this concept is, like, really cool. And now where it is, I mentioned it briefly, it just sucks. You and I both thought Money in the Bank last year was terrible and a farce and just a joke in a – yep, there you go. That's the exact motion right there. Just every – just bad in so many forms and facets. It was not good at all. And then it goes to Otis, and they don't even do anything with Otis, like – and nothing happens with it. And then Miz gets it, and I've never been a fan of The Miz, and I really want to because I think he's a really good promo. I want to like him. I just don't buy his stuff in the ring. Like, I just don't think he is a quality enough worker. But much like – I was going to say much like Alexa Bliss, but I think Alexa Bliss is a better wrestler than Miz is a wrestler. But regardless, I like Miz's promo work, and I like his character and what he does, and I'm okay with his gimmick. But I just don't like – ugh. Like, I really just want to be like, dude, can you just cash in and fail with your cash in already so we can forget that you have it and just kind of reset here? Because I just don't – your notes in the thing for him going over the subject was like Miz and Money in the Bank, like the credibility. I don't find any credibility to it. And especially too, like, I don't get – like, what is your aim in, like, having Edge just degrade the guy with the briefcase? Like, and having your guy with the briefcase just lose over and over and, like, not look good and not even be able to cash in the right way and just all these things. Like, is it so when he cashes in and fails, it's expected? Or is it when he cashes in and wins, it's a swerve? But then if that's the case, okay, cool, but now your belt is on this dude who, like, sucks and who everybody thinks is an idiot. But are you just supposed to think that that's all turned around because he's the champion and he, like, cashed in and, like, took advantage? It just doesn't make sense to me in a lot of ways. And it's a real shame because I feel like there were so many awesome Money in the Bank moments. And the Money in the Bank, I know how much you loved it. I liked it as well. Again, I still think it's, like, a cool concept and a really neat thing, and it just sucks where it is. Like, I had known, because obviously I've seen it, but I, like, forgot that Miz had the Money in the Bank briefcase until Monday. And then I forgot about it again until you put it in, like, the pre-show notes, and I was like, oh crap. And I was like, how did I forget? I just saw Edge, like, make fun of him for his cash-in, like, philosophy on Monday. Like, I don't, and it's just so forgettable for a multitude of reasons, and just, I don't know what the end game is. And then your point to add on top of it, like, why put him in the Elimination Chamber match? Is he going to, like, get eliminated and then cash in later in that match? That would be, like, an interesting, like, probably a first. Like, I don't think anyone's ever been in a match that they've, like, lost and been eliminated from and then cashed in or done some, like, so maybe he does that. Like, maybe there's some kind of... Yeah, I just don't know where it goes or what he's doing with it, and it's just disappointing because I think the concept is still really cool, but this last year, this most recent run has got to be up there for, like, worst Money in the Bank run ever. Corbin has one as well he won it, but then his was – I think that was at the time where he had heat on him for something he did in real life, and WWE officials were pissed at him, so that's why they made him cash in like that and lose. I think that's what it was, but at the end of the day, like, it was still a horrible reign and a horrible failed cash-in. That one is up there for me in terms of being terrible, especially recently, but this one is, like, I don't even know if it's arguably the worst ever, but especially, yeah, I think it is the worst ever, especially because of the match that it came from and how it was won, and just the match, it's all bad in so many ways, and it sucks.
Even on the women's front, I can't even think who won.
Asuka.
Because the next night, Becky did. Like, it just has no meaning anymore. Like, they either cash in within a month or two, and, you know, whatever, they can cash in whenever they feel like it. But I do feel it should be at least a 4 or 5 month thing where you can get some storylines out of it. You can give it a little bit of momentum. You can do a couple of bait and switches in that time period. I've just let it go away for a bit. And when it comes back, get rid of Money in the Bank as a pay-per-view and put it back in WrestleMania where it belongs. WrestleMania is good as an opener ladder match. Money in the Bank. Done.
That's a good thing. I second that completely. I don't think it needs to be the same thing with like the Elimination Chamber. I don't think the pay-per-view should not be called what one of the matches is. Like that, it's not like we're naming some pay-per-view like Welcome to WWE Street Fight because like the main event has like a street fight match. Like that doesn't make any sense. Just name it something. Call it whatever generic thing that Vince thinks sounds intimidating. And have it be at that thing. Yeah, I don't think we need to have a pay-per-view called Money in the Bank because there's a Money in the Bank match at that pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Put it back at Mania. That's a really good way. That's an awesome kickoff. Everybody's going to be invested right off. That's the opening match. It's a ladder match. The winner gets the Money in the Bank briefcase. Boom. Halfway through the show, do the same thing with the women. Boom. Awesome. Case closed.
You got a winner.
I don't get it.
But...
And then give it to somebody who matters or to somebody who you're looking. And see, even that, again, we spoke about it last week with the whole, like, part-timer thing and how do we feel about, like, Edge and Christian and even this, like, the former world champions being in the Elimination Chamber for Raw. Even that, like, with Miz, why does Miz need the briefcase? Are we really trying to, like, establish Miz? Like, does he need it? Is this a thing to, like, so many thoughts.
Oh boy. I'm gonna be keeping a close eye on this one to see what transpires, but if anything goes down at Mania.
I would love for the Miz to cash in. I would love just for the sheer chaos of it, I would love for the Miz to cash in on Reigns and beat Reigns for the belt. I would love to see WWE just screw up a really great thing they have by doing that. And then also part of me would love to see, like, also, but if they did it right, like, just how maybe Reigns, like, just tears everything to pieces because he's infuriated that, like, that's how he lost the belt. I could just see them just, like it's Reigns versus The Rock at WrestleMania. And everybody's wondering, like, oh, man, is The Rock going to be the one to put him down? And Reigns beats him, and then, like, The Miz cashes in and, like, takes the belt. That would just be so terrible. But, like, also, I would love it.
If they do that, please be the night that we do a watch-along.
Oh, my God, dude, that would be – I don't know what their reaction would be. I think it would just be pure silence and shock from us just, like – What?
I'd just walk away. I'd just get out of the chair. No, I wouldn't actually. I'd like to watch the drama unfold. I would be straight on Twitter. That's where I would be. I'd be straight on Twitter.
Dude, that would be wild, yeah. That's what I want to see.
I want to see that now. I don't want to see anything else. That's the outcome. That's the end game for the Money in the Bank. Ruin a good thing.
And then... Because of Miz's promo work, though, I would love to see the night after, like, Miz proclaiming himself the head of the table and the new tribal chief. And could you imagine him coming out with, like, some, like, fake tattoo sleeve, like Roman? And, like, I would laugh. That would be good. That would make me... I would love to see Miz proclaim himself, like, the head of the table and not the tribal chief. That would be so good.
Look at us booking things successfully.
Or could you imagine him like Roman hasn't showed up to the arena yet and he's walking up to Jey Uso and he's like, come on. And then Jey's like, what do you mean, come on? He's like, well, come with me. And then Jey's like, why? Because Miz is like, well, I'm your chief. Yeah, I'm your tribal chief. You come with me. We're in the same tribe. Come on, grab your dad and the rest of your family and let's go.
Please. I cannot unsee this now. It needs to happen.
I want Miz to call himself the tribal chief, and then I want John Morrison to start dressing like the Usos. Just to, like, fulfill that, like, give me the wet permed hair type of look. Give me the skinny jeans and the Nike Air Force Ones. Like, give me that. Give me that gimmick swap. I love it.
Oh, he could have... You could bring back Eminem and have Joey Mercury, Morrison cut their hair. Well, I'm saying that Joey Mercury's bald, but put a wig on him, cut John Morrison's hair, the perms, the wet look. Oh, yes.
Or if they wanted to go the opposite way and have Morrison try to be like Paul Heyman and like slick back his hair in a nice tight ponytail, give him a suit, and like, yeah, that would be the advocate for the Miz, the new tribal chief. See, we've turned that around. Look at us.
Yeah, see, there's a bit of positivity. People hate it, but I would love it.
I would love it from
a... Let's make it happen.
So that's one of those, Carrick. Like... No, 1,000%. That's the, we're the Joker in The Dark Knight when Alfred's like, some people just want to see the world burn. That's us right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Putting a spin on a terrible thing.
Make lemonade out of a rock and a piece of paper.
if the Universal title is defended on the show that we watch, I'm just going to be like, come on, Miz, let's do this. So imagine if his music hit and like, we're like, oh, it's happening. It's happening.
You're like freaking out.
Oh, I can't unsee it. I cannot unsee it.
You're welcome.
Let's make it a thing.
Hmm.
There we go. Let's leave that potential outcome ingrained in your minds as we wrap up the episode here. Now, we were gonna plug next week's live Twitch show, but we've already done that. So tune in on Twitch next week, twitch.tv/projectdits at around 2 a.m. UK time and 9... Well, oh no, it was 2:30, wasn't it, that we were going for? 2:30
yeah, so like 9:30 Eastern America. Eastern time.
Whatever.
I was going to say 9:30 American time. I was like, that's not the right verbiage. Yes, Eastern Standard Time.
Could be anything. But yes. So it's going to be a late one on the UK front, but if you're in America, specifically the Eastern side of things. Or yeah, I will say that Pacific as well actually will fit you nicely. It's not going to be too late then.
Yep, 6:30 p.m. in the West Coast.
There you go. See, it's doable. Mm. Come by. Stop by. It's going to be good. Draft that WrestleMania dream card. Boom. Mm.
Tribal chief.
But you do, speaking of live streaming, you know, you, I think you do a little bit of live streaming, do you not?
No. Every once in a while, yeah. Like, I guess if you wanted to like label it, from time to time, every week, Thursday nights at 9 p.m. I do this podcast called Disguised Coverage, part of the Cover One Sports Network. It's on the Buffalo Bills of the NFL, the National Football League, the only league that is referred to as football, because there's like a European thing that people call soccer, but some people mistakenly label it football, but it's not that. And yeah, so you find me here weekly co-hosting the Dow Pod. You can also find me as the regular weekly co-host of myself, just myself, on Disguised Coverage, part of the Cover One Sports Network. And find me on Twitter at pro_ant. That's pro2_ant. Yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Nice.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
So whatever. Yeah.
And on my side of things, you've got my handle above my head, which is pretty much me across the board on socials, Twitter, Instagram, take the at away, and you've got me on YouTube as well. And Twitch, of course, being Twitch. The main place to find me, really, at the moment. I'm there 3 times a week, Monday, Tuesday, Friday, and now Saturday for the pod.
Look at us, going up
in the world. But yeah, that's it. So I guess, as is Dow Pod tradition these days, we're going to hand over the reins to Anthony, who's going to...
Yeah.
He's going to do something philosophical.
Yep.
There you go. Got it out. As he does every week. Honestly, if you need any inspiration, you need to listen up. Because Anthony's final thoughts, they'll get you. This comes out on Monday. This starts your week right.
Right.
So Anthony, what treat, what piece of advice have you got for these wonderful people this week?
I appreciate you setting the bar that high, and you know, there's a lot going on in the world, and there's a lot of things that come to mind when we look at the state of things, and it is in that vein that I've written these final words for this episode, just to kind of really sum things up for where we are and who we are and where we're going ideally in the future. And if you'll bear with me, again, there's a bit of length to this one, as there usually is for these, you know, wrap-ups and these closures to this episode. So pulled up my notes here on my phone. And, you know, I tried to memorize it, but it was just too emotional. Goodbye.